Hello, iGaming Intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsors. The iGaming Next podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. I've been working with Ashley, Lewis, and the guys over at Pragmatic Solutions over the last year. And as the early supporter of this podcast, I cannot recommend them enough. The Pragmatic Solutions Player Account Management Platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo.
Future trends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lindt.
Morning, good morning, Jonas. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you, Jonas. And, you know, in the preparation for this podcast, I've heard some really interesting comments. Like I was telling you before the podcast that I was speaking to our mutual friend, you could say, Phil Pearson here. And when I mentioned that I'm recording this podcast today with him, he shined up like a little kid on Christmas Eve here today. He was excited for this, so I am excited as well to be talking to you, today.
Phil is a funny guy. I mean, we are LinkedIn buddies, but whenever he says something, it's pretty, you know, interesting and funny. So I'm also looking forward to this.
Yeah, great. And I think that is, you know, mentioned this in the podcast before, but there is few people in this industry who is actually willing and open to have strong opinions and to really stand for what they believe in this industry. And I think, especially as a game studio, you're a creative company in a sense, and to be able to have these strong beliefs and so on and so forth, it must be an asset to you. But do you also get in trouble sometimes for being like very straight?
Yeah,
to the point.
I normally say what I think, and it's sometimes not always good for me. But I mean, I do interviews like I do games. I mean, we go our own way, and you know, that's just the way it is. And, that suits me good. And I don't do many interviews, so this is an exception actually.
I'm very honored. I'm very honored, Jonas. Yeah, it's been a long time in the making, this one, but here we are. I want to start off by a question here, Jonas. So you know, you obviously produce really high level games and super detailed, and they are really loved, especially by the hardcore slot enthusiasts. And I wanted to start off by asking, like, how important is it to be a gambler yourself? Like, do you play slots yourself, for example? Not only No Limit slots, obviously testing environments and stuff like that, but do you also gamble in general?
No, actually I don't. I mean, I'm sure that most will, you know, disagree with me, but I don't believe you need to be a slot gambler to build a good slot. And I mean, I'm not, and I build slots and they are pretty good. So I mean, sometimes it feels like it's an excuse for being a gambler, like, and you need a real job. So that's like a reason to say, oh, you have to be a gambler to build a good slot, but I don't believe in it.
Okay.
But I do play a lot of other, competitors' games. I play them a lot, but I play money. I don't need to, you know, gamble for real to understand, you know, what's behind the slots. I think it's like there's, I mean, if you're experienced, you can see through how it will be to play a slot with real money.
And which of your competitors' games are your favorite games, would you say?
there's so many good games around, and I really like quite a lot of our competitors' games. And you know, when I can feel that they are focusing on the product, I normally tend to like whatever they do. And I have a couple of favorites, and it's no secret. I like push gaming. I like big time gaming. I think Elk has done good games, maybe not recently, but at least in the past. So yeah, there's a lot of good game providers around.
Any game provider that have kind of lost their mojo a bit, do you feel?
Many game providers, I think, what has happened to this industry the last 10 years is it's a lot. I mean, it's something totally new now than it used to be 10 years ago or 5 years ago or even 2 years ago. And there's a lot of successful game providers that, you know, been around for a long time. And what happened, I think, to most of them is that they got stuck in the past a little bit too much. And they now, when the industry is changing, they don't really change with the industry. And then they fall behind a little bit and go flat or even go down. So that's pretty normal.
Yeah, and like, how has the industry changed over the, you mentioned like the last 10 years, let's say. I mean, 10 years ago, it was NetEnt who was on the top of the hill, you know, they felt unbeatable. Yes. in a way, and they've been it's been a slow regression from that top format provider at NetEnt. Like, what happened there? And also just go walk through the changes of the industry as you have seen it in the last decade.
It's a totally new world out there now. I mean, 10 years ago it was just about building a slot. That was it. And you know, you built a slot and you sort of made it available somewhere somehow, and it just earned tons of money on it. And then obviously that changed a little bit when a couple of other, you know, slot providers came up, and it, you know, distribution became a big thing together with, you know, producing a slot. But I mean, the content that was built back in the days was, you know, not that good, but still worked very good.
Yeah. And then, it was speaking more to the masses, perhaps, or it's like now there's so many games that you have to find your niche as a.
Yeah, I mean, back then you just built a slot. I mean, it didn't really matter what you did.
Yeah.
And the process of building one, I'm sure, you know, it was a lot different from what it is now. It's all about the product, and the product is not just the game itself. It's also things around the game, which is, I mean, we are becoming a more mature industry. So we have to, you know, work more as other mature industries do, which is working with the brand, identity of your company and things around the game. Who do we cooperate with? I mean, what kind of atmosphere, customer segmentations, data analysis. And I think that's where a lot of companies that were successful before, they are a little bit stuck on, like, I don't understand why it's not working anymore.
Yeah.
And one big problem is that they're still making a lot of money on, you know, from the days that, you know, when they were successful, because the value of a old title that's sort of been cemented into being successful, I mean, it almost never ends. We see that still. I mean, some of the titles came out like 5-10 years ago. They are still like number 1, 2, 3, 4. So,
What do you feel like when you produce a game these days? Can you feel before you launch it that it's going to be a hit, let's say? Or does it sometimes come from left field that a game that you are not expecting to be the biggest game of the year turns out to be much bigger than you expected? Is it easy to anticipate these things for you?
I think you can get a feeling that this is really going to work out. We are getting more and more comfortable in, you know, what will make a good game. And that's because we are relying more on, a process and a checklist and, you know, data analysis on how to make a good slot, you know, today. Okay. And yes, I think that you can anticipate it, but not in the way it used to be, and you know the way a lot of other providers work, and it's more of a guessing game.
Okay.
When you just do it like, you know, NetEnt used to do it 5-10 years back.
And, yeah.
You know, they still do. I'm not sure.
Fair enough. So I mean, Jonas, you clearly have managed to figure out the secret sauce here, let's say, to create. I mean, on the Big Green boards, your games are, I think, voted second, third, and fifth best games of the year last year, and clearly the hardcore segment is really enjoying the games that you are producing. Can you share the secret sauce? Like, what is it that you think that makes your games stand out so much against your competitors?
Well, it's about the product. That's the only thing we care about. We don't care about anything else. We don't want to be stuck in the past, and we've been in the past as well. I have to say that. So why I feel when I look at others, and I can almost feel like, oh, this is what we went through 2019 or 18, where we were, you know, doing it over and over again and didn't really work. But I mean, I think us not being that successful a couple of years back made us, you know, forced into take drastic sort of do drastic changes to how we do the product, and we sort of got into the right track end of 19, and then we just sort of unlocked it, and the secret is, well, I don't know if I have the secret sauce, but it has to do with engaging with the players in a different way through the product. And it's not the game only. It's, like you said, it's the community. It's being, you know, who do we target? And, you know, for that customer group, what do they want? We want to sort of align ourselves with our players, and we don't want to surprise them too much. We want to give them something that, you know, they expect a little bit, but still something new.
Yeah. And because you have talked a lot about as well the importance of brand identity and the identity of No Limit City, you have this, you've chosen this edgy path, right? Which you seem to be alone in a sense. You seem to want to push the limits and so on and so forth. Is that also kind of part of the secret here, that you are not, at least from the outside, it seems that you are not interested in making generic games, let's say, that speaking to the masses. Like you are making particular games that that are a bit crazy, and you know, not everyone has to love them. You know, it's this famous quote that says, "If you want to make everyone happy, then sell ice cream." And maybe that is something.
Yeah, we don't sell ice cream at No Limit. That's for sure. I mean, we are a little bit. We are a little bit edgy, and I think it came slowly by, you know, analyzing what worked for us, and also like the change of product that we wanted to, you know, target maybe a niche of the market, and in that niche we wanted to, you know, dominate the segment, and you know, for that niche it felt natural to be quite extreme in different ways, both through themes but also through, you know, volatility you know, other parts of the slots, and also the way we talk to the players and the community. It's like everything is
right.
It's a plan for our players, really.
Yeah, because you're not scared of a bit of controversy here as well. I mean, and it can be such a fine line, walking this edgy line and pushing the limits. Like I've been reading now, the upcoming game Mental here is like really, you know, pushing it further into like the serial killer vibes and you know, gore and all this. They think like,
yes,
like where do you like how do you draw the line, like? What is,
well,
okay and what is not okay?
I don't know where the line is. I'm trying to balance on it, maybe.
Yeah, to find it, yeah.
I don't really understand, because, I mean, we released a couple of games, and there's been a little bit of, you know, talk in the community. Even competitors has, you know, called me up and like, what are you doing? I mean, can you make a slot, I mean, a prison slot, and, you know, joke about, you know, dropping the soap and stuff. And I mean, I'm a little bit surprised because if you look at the computer game industry, if you look at the movie industry,
yeah.
I mean, they can do whatever they want. And there's no real good way to, you know, make sure that your viewers are, you know, under 18. I mean, that's just all over the place. And, you know, you get away with murder, like, you know, like it's nothing. So I don't understand why we should be, you know, held into, you know, pushed into this snowflake mentality. I mean, we know our players are above 18, so I think we should have full freedom to do whatever we want. But of course, then it's the regulations, and, you know, some regulators are a little bit sensitive towards some stuff, and then we just try to adapt in those markets. But I mean, we are not going to change. We're going to go all in on what we think is a good slot, which is like, I mean, going under the skin of the players, trying to create as much atmosphere in the slot as possible. Obviously, we don't have the same power as a movie, but I mean, we'll do our best to do to do it as good as possible.
I think what you mentioned is really important here. You know, how far do you draw the line? Because as you say, in the movie industry, the video games industry is pushing the limits far beyond what the game studio and slot industry is doing. And maybe that is related to the fact that the industry is quite young, in a sense.
I don't understand it fully, but of course, I mean, if a regulator says this is not, you know, allowed, we don't do it. But other That's than that, I mean, we're just gonna do what we think is, you know, the best possible product, and that might be, you know, gory or something like that, and then we're just gonna do it.
Can you talk through a little bit, like, when you come up with the idea of the mental game, for example, like, how are the discussions in the boardroom going?
I don't know. They're mental. No, but I mean, we are a group of, you know, creative people, and, you know, it's a really fun gang, and we have this way of working now, which is maybe a little bit different from others, and we just talk and discuss and try to figure out how can this sort of theme go all the way with, you know, everything we think is a good slot, with the math and everything around the slot, the marketing, the player discussion, the player forums. We try to analyze how will it, you know, be everywhere, and, you know, how will it work with our sort of mechanics that we use? How will it present itself in different scenarios? And then, you know, when we feel we locked in a good theme, then we try to create a game according to that, and then we follow it quite strict. It has to be the game has to be about that. So when I look at some competitors' games, I mean, I don't understand anything. It's just all over the place, and it's like fruits, and they mix things, and it doesn't make any sense. And that's not how we want to build a game at No Limits.
No, it makes sense. I mean, it has to also be like the creative process, especially for you guys who are really pushing the limits. I mean, you must have really infused this feeling in your team that, you know, any idea is okay. Like, because I think in a lot of teams in creative departments, they are perhaps ring-fenced a little bit around not the ability not to go too crazy, let's say, and like these crazy ideas, you have to be able to, let's say that 9 out of 10 ideas, so probably you won't do them, but it's okay, like, right? Like you should be able to.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like
throw ideas around.
You can't have the normal ideas. That's forbidden. We have to be.
That's when you get angry.
You know, a little bit crazy. I mean, that's good for us now. But I mean, that's also like you have to think about. This is the path we are on now, and that might not be the case if we would do 60 games per year. I don't think we can go and do all that like the same we do now. I do think there's maybe a limit on how much you can do under one brand, for example. And I think some companies, they do maybe too many games under the same brand, which can get a little confusing for the players.
Maybe you should change the name to Limit City instead.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should. And then we do some, we do 24 extreme games and we do, you know, 12, right. You know, soft games. I don't know. It's a possibility.
But what's your thought? Because I hear a lot of operators discussing this in general. Like, your thoughts on some game studios, they have this ethos to produce as many games as possible. You know, like churning out games versus, let's say, Todd of Evolution. He talks a lot about like focus on creating the games and do them right. For example, like what is the right way to do things? I mean, is there something to be said about just like churning out as many games as you can and in order to do
for
all
us
areas of the market?
Churning out games fast. I mean, for us, that's not a good, you know, business model. That's what we used to do back in the days. We built a game and it churned out and, you know, we didn't make any money pretty much. And then, you know, when we started to, you know, change the way we work with product and we build a couple of really good games, I mean, they don't churn out. That has a huge effect on how much money you earn. I mean, it's like making a good game every month. I mean, we have games that grow on a monthly basis. So,
yeah,
obviously, I mean, at least for us, we have to build good games. That's that's what we need to do. And but it's not only building good games. I mean, we also want to build them cheap. And that's like there's a lot of cliche in among providers because many will say, we put quality over quantity and stuff like that. And I mean, to me, when I look at the game, it feels more like they don't know how to control costs. So I do think you can build a good game, you know, quite cheap. And you should really focus on having a healthy relationship between cost and quality and quantity. I mean, today, I mean, you can't do, you know, like NetEnt did a couple of years ago, have hundreds and hundreds of people and, you know, not produce many games. It doesn't make any sense. And I think that, you know, now quite a lot of providers realize that, you know, we can't, if we're going to be, you know, this amount of people, we need to build this amount of games.
Yeah. Speaking of NetEnt and obviously been acquired by Evolution, and they are still publishing, you know, stagnant numbers from the quarterly report that came here a couple of weeks ago. You know, moving into the kind of the topic of Evolution in general, you know, they acquired NetEnt, they acquired Big Time Gaming, Red Tiger, of course, included in the NetEnt deal. What do you think, what do you make of Evolution in general? Do you think that they're them monopolizing the game production more and more, let's say? Is that a good thing for the industry or a bad thing for the industry?
Well, consolidation and it's natural. It will happen. And, you know, the way the valuations are now at the moment, especially Evolution, it makes total sense to buy things and, you know, buy it with shares. So it's just, you know, it makes sense. So that's why it's going to happen. More and more.
Yeah, consolidation itself is a natural progression. So for Evo, it's good. But what do you think for the ecosystem itself, for the operators, for the future growth of the industry? Is it do you think Evolution is going to turn into Playtech 2.0? Do you think they'll continue their march on? I mean, you must be thinking a lot about this.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the plans, but I mean, I'm sure the consolidation will continue with Evolution and, you know, other companies too. And you know, but there will always be new companies coming up with good products. So I don't see that, you know, one company will take over the world or something like that. That will never happen. And you know, when you grow and things gets more complicated, and then, you know, there's always new fresh creative companies that comes in and, you know, makes good products.
Do you think there's a risk of, let's say, Evolution evolution becoming so big that they will potentially put pressure on operators to only highlight their games, for example, because at the end of the day, it's difficult to be an operator without without using evolution as a supplier. And when they're in that strong position, eventually they might start taking advantage of that position, right? To close others out. You know, Pragmatic is growing a lot. They are becoming a needle in the eye. You know,
yeah, why wouldn't they shut them out? I don't know. I mean, it makes sense to apply a little bit of pressure, but I think it's like they, I mean, if you become very, very big, I'm not sure the best strategy is to, you know, push the customers, force the customers into something they don't really want to do. It's not a good long-term plan. But of course, I mean, they will be able to keep the rates up. And I'm sure there will be a little bit of pressure, you know, for them to make money. I mean, it's what companies try to do. Everyone wants to try to make as much money as possible.
Yeah, for sure. This is, I guess, we have history. We have a lesson in history here, which is, you know, the clearest example is Playtech back in the 2000s, who tried to do just that, right? They're trying to set exclusive deals with operators, and eventually they grew to the point where that model just was not working anymore, right?
That was back in the days when you built slots, and it was difficult to have it like many providers, and it was like technical issues, and you know, now
and then through the seamless wallet that kind of changed, right?
And now that doesn't make sense, and you know, that's obviously something they realized, that this doesn't make sense anymore.
Fair enough. Let's I'd like to change the topic a bit, something completely different here, because it's something that I'm interested in myself as well, which is award shows of the industry, and fake awards particularly. I know that you've been like very vocal here. Like, what is the state of industry awards is my question
to you. It's different, I think. I mean, some award companies are, you know, more serious than others. No, but I mean, it's I think it's probably one of the more stupid things that exists in our industry. It's very much old school thing. I mean, I don't blame the award companies. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. I respect every company that wants to make a buck. But the way it is done now, it's like the same. It was used like 10 years ago. And it's like you have to pay to most of them. Sometimes it's like not obvious that it's related, but everyone knows it's obvious.
It's kind of like a wink-wink.
First you pay, and then you celebrate, you got shortlisted, and then, you know, if you win, then it's like a lot of celebration. And I think where we are now in the industry, it doesn't need to be like that. Because it gets kind of ridiculous. Then, you know, people know what games are, for example, best game of the year or something like that. It's not, people know what games are best that year. And you know, when they don't even get shortlisted or they don't win, it's like, why do we do this? Why do we celebrate the shortlist when, you know, the two best games are not, you know, in the competition and stuff like that? So it gets a little bit ridiculous. And I think the industry should change. And, you know, if somebody talks about it on LinkedIn or wherever, I'm happy to say what I think. It's just stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been offered to buy awards?
Yeah. I mean, of course. I mean, sometimes it's like, this is the pricing to win and get shortlisted. The bigger companies, they're a little bit more like careful about how they express themselves. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, we didn't really do that good games up until 2020. I mean, we didn't really have any game that could, you know, for example, win Game of the Year. But 2020, we released two very good games, Deadwood, Punk Rocker. And they were, you know, Deadwood, together with Money Train 2, excellent game. They were, you know, all the awards where the players voted, they were like the top two to win, because they were dominating the 2020. And, you know, we submitted these games to one of these award companies, and, you know, there's like, okay, guys, you can win now. This is going to happen. Like, we're so glad for you. And, you know, next day somebody calls up and it's like, okay, what can you buy from us? What subscriptions, what, you know, banner space, what do you want to buy? It's like, we don't want to buy anything, but you have to buy, you have to work with us. Like, we're not going to buy anything from you guys. And then boom, we're not shortlisted. And, you know, then the shortlist comes up and it's like, I don't even know the companies that was on that shortlist. I never heard of them. I've never played a game. I never heard of the games. Mm. And I mean, that year, Money Train 2, Crazy Time, what was there? I mean, I don't know who won. Something I never heard about won that year. And it's like, then it gets a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then I feel the industry deserves better. I mean, and for us, it's like, okay, this is how it still works. I'm disappointed, but you know, we're going to try to build good games instead of even caring about this. And when people celebrate being shortlisted, I'm like, it's embarrassing. Yeah. You shouldn't do it. Sometimes I tell them, it's like, don't do this. It's just like, yeah. And you know, it means nothing to me, those awards.
Yeah. No, we've seen there are more, there are some examples that are clear, or some organizers that are, let's say, more clear than others on what the terms are for buying awards. And some of them, it's just unbelievable, actually. Like, yeah, like it's an embarrassment to be associated with the awards, like, because you know that it's so obvious that they are bought, you know. And
yeah, I mean, people should be careful. People should be careful to sit in a jury like that, because I mean, what they're evaluating might, you know, is fake. It's like companies paid money to be there. Yeah. So, and I do think that, you know, you don't have to do it that way. You can, if it's like, I mean, now there are so many categories, so I get all like dizzy, but I mean, let's say Game of the Awards. I mean, it doesn't really matter why not let the best games be, you know, be there.
All the time. Yeah, exactly. So like, otherwise it's not an award. I mean, but you know, then there are like companies like Big Win Board, where the vote is by the players, right? And, yes. And in some way, that is, at the end of the day, it's the players that decide who are the best games.
Yes, you know? And I mean, so when the player decides, it means a lot to us to win something, or you know, be top three or top 10 or something. So obviously, Big Win Board being the most respected review site, and you know, being strong on being independent and fair, so that means a lot. You know, anywhere else where the player votes, it's like, it's respect if you win. And I'll be the first to say it, when you know, 2020, when Money Train 2 won, I'm the first to say it, like, congrats guys, and that's a very, very good game, so they deserve it.
And then it'd be interesting to know by Big Win Board how they police the votes themselves, because obviously, you know, if a game supplier would decide like, we want to win this vote, they could, you know, create 1,000 fake accounts and vote, essentially. I wonder if there's any policing going on there as well. Or
I can imagine there's some policing. I mean, there are tools to try to remove votes like that. But I don't know how it works.
No, fair enough. I think that's something, you know, I like the idea as well, that it's the players that kind of vote, and you know, the best game is clear as day. You know, the players have voted, this is the best metric that you can possibly find. But I think they should probably be clear in the process there as well, if they want to increase their the status even more, to say, you know, like, how do they, you know, police these votes and so on and so forth? Because otherwise, we don't really know if there's any fake.
Transparency. I think that makes total sense in almost everything. So why not be, you know, honest about how things are working? And
it's just
a good idea, I think.
Yeah, for other industry awards, you know, it's like, do you feel, is there anything that the organizers can do to kind of build a trust in the judging process? You mentioned, how do you, like, you know, we organize iGaming Idol, for example, and the transparency is something we talk a lot about. You know, we are audited by BDO, for example, so they are in the judging process. They are the ones who kind of take the judges' decisions, and they hold on to those envelopes and they audit the process. Is that enough?
You think that's a good idea. I mean, transparency. This is how it works, and you know, this is how it went down. And you know, you can check the votes or whatever, how people voted. Or I mean, that's a good idea. Why not? I'm also happy to pay for if there's like a huge dinner or something. Obviously, that's a that's cost money, and you know that's I'm happy to pay for that. But I mean, I just don't like the that thing that, you know, you have to prepay your shortlisting or something. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, exactly, and that is kind of the toxicity in the events. I mean, when we launched Idol, for example, I mean, people, you know, there's so many award shows that are paid for, let's say, so that the industry, they just assume that the next thing is paid for as well. You know what I mean? So even with the strict judging processes and all of this, it's even so, people still feel out, but there's, you know, they decided somehow or whatever. And I understand why, you know, because...
Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, a few will destroy the few... For the others, yeah. I mean, that's the way it is.
yeah, it's like that. I mean, it's a bit of an uphill battle sometimes, but yeah, at the end of the day, the transparency is everything in their virtues, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
So onto I want to switch topic again here, Jonas, and something that's really interesting that came up recently as well. It's on the Twitch side of things. I don't know how closely you've been paying attention here, but there's been a bit of a debate raging in the Twitch community amongst the bigger streamers on the Twitch platform. There's a streamer called H3, and he's one of the biggest streamers in the world, both YouTube and Twitch, and he has a big podcast. He's been doing this for, you know, 15 years and so on, and he's been kind of lifting the issue of casino streamers recently, and particularly cross streamers, the ones that have a large following streaming Fortnite and Counter-Strike and so on and so forth, and then they switch over to casino streaming, and obviously they have a following which is like 95% based of underaged streamers, and they are promoting essentially VPN-based crypto casinos where anyone can deposit, so on and so forth. So clearly nefarious sites that they are targeting, and that obviously led to Twitch kind of having to take this issue seriously. And now the result of that was obviously that they banned affiliate links from Twitch if you are a casino streamer. And so I want to just slide into this topic a bit. Like, what do you make of these restrictions by Twitch, and just in general, like, what's your relationships to casino streamers in general?
I mean, no big surprise there. I mean, I don't think that, you know, real money gambling should be, you know, showed to underage public like that. I mean, it's not a good idea. I mean, Twitch is owned by, isn't it like Amazon or something? I mean, they would never allow that. So that was bound to happen. I guess that, you know, well, I don't know what to say. I mean, casino streamers stream our game. It's not totally unimportant for us. I mean, they market our game in some sense, and, you know, explain to the players how they work, and, you know, how it is. And, you know, if you prefer to watch a streamer play a game and you get a little bit of adrenaline out of that, it's better than play yourself. Maybe you don't have the money. I don't know. So yeah. Streaming, I'm not against it. And to some extent, it's one of the channels we use to market ourselves and market our game.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it must be... Because the rise of casino streaming is a really interesting phenomenon in general. The fact that people are interested in watching others play it was something, you know, no one could have guessed a couple of years ago, I think, you know, and it turns out to be a very powerful marketing tool. I mean, it's one of the few ways really to market a game to the masses. Would you say so as well? Or
yeah, I mean, definitely. This is the future. I mean, this is how, this is maybe how you see a slot game being played the first time is through like looking at someone else doing it, and it's just going to grow. I mean, I don't have to look at my own, you know, two kids. I mean, before they play Minecraft, they look at some dude playing Minecraft. So the whole generation coming now, this is what, you know, this is going to be the new normal. You look at people doing stuff, and then you do it yourself.
Yeah. Do you think that the streamers will be somewhat crippled now as they are not able to to earn a revenue through affiliation, or do you think they'll find kind of workarounds? I would imagine that
workarounds for sure. I mean, if it doesn't work on Twitch, I mean, I'm sure that soon enough there will be an alternative to do it, and that there will definitely work around, because this is going to continue one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly. It's like OnlyFans, the bad in porn. It's not like porn streamer will stop, is he's going to move to a different platform. No?
Probably you're right about that.
But yeah, and so on the topic of Twitch streaming in general, like, what's your thoughts as well on the fake streaming community as well? It's a bit of a debate raging there. When you work with your... share your thoughts.
I mean, it's getting a little bit out of hand, I think. I mean, it used to be a little talk about it, like a year, maybe two, a couple of years back. But then as of now, it's like all over the place. And of course, it gets a little bit ridiculous when you see some of the, you know, comes in a streamer and he's betting like hundreds of euros per spin and, you know, having hundreds of thousands on his bankroll. It doesn't make any sense, really. I mean, I don't know what to say. I think, again, I think transparency is good. I think it's very difficult to regulate this industry. But I think that, you know, they have to move towards being more transparent, maybe go like it is like when you listen to a podcast or, you know, you're some influencer doing something on social media. I mean, they are honest about, like, I'm being sponsored about this. I talk about it and this is my point. They tell, like, okay, I get paid to do this. And then, you know, they do that. They present it in a way. And I think you can still do that in casino streaming, but I mean, we're not there yet, but I think we will go in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. So fake money streaming is what you're saying is fake money streaming itself is not an issue as long as you are just open and transparent about it, in other words. And I guess that's
it's like playing play money. I mean, and if you're open about playing play money online, why should that be, you know, forbidden? Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. But the problem now is that somebody plays play money and they say it's real money. And I don't know where the line goes. Sometimes it's like obvious, like this can't be real, but sometimes it's not that obvious. And, you know, as a provider, there's like a little bit misconception on in the industry that we are somehow, we know, but we don't really know, because for us, it looks like a real money round. And, you know, the price the operator has to pay is the fee to the operator. So the problem is, I would say, to 99% of the time, is between the streamer and the operator. Because there's some kind of agreement between them that, you know, we deposit you money and then, you know, you cannot withdraw them. Just play. And, you know, then they, you know, have to pay a fee to us providers. And that's the cost of the whole thing.
But
on that subject, I do think there are actually providers that are also in on it. I mean, there has been providers that, you know, maybe come under a little bit of pressure because, and then they, you know, okay, yes, we do pay streamers. And I think that's fine. But, you know, not if they say I play for real money and it's not.
Yeah, exactly. What's your relationships to streamers? Like, how do you work with them?
We don't work with that many streamers. We work with Casino Grounds, for example, and when we do a game release, and it's always transparent. I mean, we do this. There's always some kind of fun event, maybe a tournament. The money goes to prizes in the tournament and stuff like that, and it's like. One company have a business relationship with another company. It's not that's something we do, and you know I think that's fine. And if you would ask those streamers, like, does No Limit pay you to do this? They would just say yes. We do, and that's totally fine. And we don't really pay. We don't pay streamers. We don't pay any streamer that, you know, is not open about that. You know, this is a business relationship we have with No Limit.
Yeah, exactly. So it's more like event based, let's say, around the release. Yeah, for example, you make a special event.
Based,
yeah. I don't see why that would be an issue either.
No, I don't see either. I mean, we're companies here, so we have to, you know, try to get our product out.
Yeah. It also seems like one of the things, Jonas, where it's so new and operators, suppliers, streamers are trying to kind of find their feet into this new segment in a way, and what is okay and what is not okay, taking into consideration responsible gambling and all of these things. And it's an evolving subject still, I feel. And it's the again, it's like a reoccurring thing in this discussion. It's the transparency that is sometimes lacking than, in other words.
I also think it's natural. I mean, this is a pretty new industry. Streaming is new within gambling, or, you know, fairly new. So of course, like, the first few years is going to be a little bit crazy, but I mean, I think it will mature, and there will be a healthy balance. There will always be people, you know, doing stuff, you know, a little bit on the edge, which might not be okay always, but, you know, it's like that with all industries. So, but I think it will be better if we just wait a few years. That's what
Yeah, exactly. And a final question for you today as well, Jonas. Like, looking into the future now, in the next couple of years, who will be the winners and losers on the as game studios? Can you make any predictions? Like,
as game studios? Yeah. I mean, I think...
And why?
Yeah, well, definitely the game studios that has a full focus on the product will be the successful ones. The pitfalls are the studios that, you know, cannot change with this new way of making a slot game. So, and I'm not sure. I mean, I see... If we look at, like, the mid-sized providers that were very successful 5 years back, that are still earning a lot of money on, you know, the titles that they, you know, made back then, they are now, you know, starting to, you know, think that, shit, I mean, we are not growing. Why is No Limit growing, you know, hundreds of percent every year, and we are, you know, going flat? So, I mean, they are trying to change now, but I mean, that's not everyone is going to succeed doing it.
That's a very politically correct answer without naming it.
No, but I mean, I still have my favorites. I mean, I think Relax. I forgot Relax last time. I managed the providers, but they are doing some good games. Some games are, you know, a little bit like not so good, so they are like a quite good mix there. But, you know, Relax and Push and Big Time Gaming, it's like, Elk maybe. I mean, love for the product will always pay off in where we are today. And, you know, some companies that used to be very successful, they need to shape up a little bit. It's just they need to change. But those companies make a lot of money on the old titles. So it's sometimes it's like the Nokia syndrome. I mean, you're so good, you're the best, and you make so much money. It's very hard to change, like, to realize that we're doing it too expensive. We are not as good as these new guys that are, you know, doing it cheaper. And, you know, there's a handful of companies that has to, you know, work in a different way in order to catch up.
Yeah, right. I'm a big fan of thinking from first principles. And essentially, I think this is what we're talking about here. So some companies, they end up thinking by analogy. And when you work by analogies, when you continue to do what you have always done. So this is what Nokia did, right? They just continued to change the phone a little bit to do based on the history of their phones, right? And then a company like Apple pops up and they say, we don't care what anyone has ever done in the phone industry before. We're just going to take whatever technologies are available to us, and we're going to create the best product based on the technology that is mature enough right now. And, you know, they create something completely different. And that is perhaps the same here in the games industry. What you're saying is some of these legacy game studios, they are used to working in a certain way, and they continue doing that because it's been working in the past, so why change?
Yes, and they're still making a lot of money. It's lagging a few years before you I think when your old titles start to churn a little bit, that's when you're thinking like, oops, I really need to think about, I mean, how many games do I make? How many people are we? I mean, that's really what happened to NetEnt. I mean, they were the biggest, the best. They were the only ones. I mean, without NetEnt 10 years ago, you were nothing if you were an operator. But now I don't even know what's left of NetEnt. I mean, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah,
in the way,
and like you say, the lag is interesting because Nokia, then, you know, in 2007, 2008, they were still the biggest mobile phone maker, even though Apple had already launched iPhone, you know, 2 years earlier. But it's a lag there, right? The future is solidified in a way, but the change still happens gradually. It doesn't happen overnight, right?
It's very normal. And I think we are very scared of our momentum right now because everything is going, it's so easy for us now. Everything is going like great. But we need to be careful about, like, we should not think we are the best, and, you know, we should be ready that, you know, there might be a day where our momentum is not so good. What is the plan then? Then we need to be flexible enough to, you know, jump on the next trend, or, you know, maybe even before that trend starts, you know, figure out what is the next thing.
Yeah.
So that's something we think about, like, all the time. It's like we have to be, you know, careful here. Let's not do what a lot of other, I mean, fall into the trap that a lot of other companies has, you know, fallen into.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I was going to ask you this as well. I mean, about trends and shifting landscape, is that something you kind of dedicate time to internally and No Limit to have discussions around? What are the future trends, or what could disrupt your company, for example?
Yeah, we're definitely talking about it. At the same time, if we have found like a something that works out for us, I mean, of course, we're going to, you know, capitalize on that and go all in on that. But I mean, I think it's important to always remind yourself that, you know, this might not be the case forever. And of course, as when you grow as a company, things get a little bit more complicated. So there's also organizational thing you have to care about. And I mean, there again, it's like you see other companies making mistakes because they grow, they earn a lot of money, and then they're going to, you know, be best at everything. They're going to open offices all around the world, and then, you know, maybe it doesn't work out. Yeah. So then you have to go back again. And we don't want to do that. Use the knowledge we have from seeing what happened to other companies and try not to make the same mistakes. That's where we are now.
Fine. And final question then, Jonas, on trends. Like, is there anything you see as an emerging trend now? Is the future, in the future, coming years?
The trend is to focus on the product, and the product is not only the game itself.
It's
everything, and company, brand, identity, relationships around with players and, you know, streamers, maybe, I don't know. That's the future.
It's kind of like whenever you launch a game, you know it's gonna be a bit crazy kind of thing. That is the identity that you're going for.
Yeah, I mean for us, I mean that's what we want. We are exactly where we want to be. I mean, when we launch a game, like, it's our players are waiting for it. They are, you know, they know almost what they're gonna get, but not really. And it's like we're in a perfect situation.
Awesome. Fantastic, Jonas. Thanks for giving some insights here into Nordic Limit City today. It's really interesting to follow. I mean, like, I've been following you on LinkedIn for a long time. I'm happy we managed to finally get this discussion to life. Is there anything you want to end with today? Any final remarks?
No, not really. It's been fun. It's been fun doing this.
Awesome. Well, take care of yourself, Jonas, and we'll continue discussing here in a way.
Okay, perfect. All right.
All right. Bye. Thank you, everyone. Bye and ciao.